for Macca's Little Wins app.
Triple M rocks footy. This is the Sunday Rub.
For Ream Hot Water Heaters. If your hot water needs replacing, accept nothing less than Australia's best. Install a Ream.
A very good afternoon and welcome to Spotless Stadium here in Sydney and Homebush. It is a magnificent Sydney day. Bit of smog about, but it's just perfect playing conditions. Very little wind up here. Magnificent arena. And we are looking forward to two gun teams going at it today. GWS take on the travelling Western Bulldogs here at Spotless Stadium. Joining me on the Sunday Rub today, thanks to our great mates Ream Hot Water Heaters, of course. This is the Sunday Rub. Wayne Swass is with us, Dale Lewis, JZJ Clark from the Herald Sun, and of course Wayne Carey is also with us. Good afternoon, gents. Swatter, welcome.
Good afternoon, BT. Hello, listeners. Looking forward to this. Good day for footy and two teams in good form. Looking forward to seeing how the Bulldogs and Giants go.
Louis travelled all the way over from Adelaide. Louis, good afternoon.
Good to see you, Bristol. Making my debut on the Sunday Rub. Yes. Know your role, play your role. Just sit back, watch the Masters in action.
So what do you think your role might be?
Well, I would have thought, does Bristol like a latte or maybe a flat white? Does he need any backup when it comes to room on the front desk? Oh, all that sort of, you know,
don't talk
me
about room. He was in a tight space. We'll get to that. And he was cramped up.
There's a new nickname coming Bristol's way, apparently, if this kind of behaviour keeps up.
First thing I said when I walked in here, and it was only me and Louis, first thing I said was, where are you sitting, Louis?
Don't put your chair back.
Yeah, not in front.
Out the back's a good spot. Duck, good afternoon. Welcome to you. You've been a Trojan this weekend. Oh, you've battled through disease and all sorts of things.
Yep. Yeah, g'day boys, g'day listeners. Travelling okay, BT. Voice is on the improve. So just won't talk as much rhubarb today as I normally do. But looking forward to some big discussion points today. And obviously the big game that you boys will be covering very nicely there in Sydney. GWS and the Bulldogs, going to be a ripper.
Yes, Duck back in the studios in Melbourne. And JZ, welcome to you. Been a big weekend in news.
Yeah, hello, BT. I've also been very brave this week. I had my wisdom teeth out on Monday. I've been sooking it up ever since. Yeah, really bad headaches. I've been taking some painkillers, BT. And they're like tranquilizer darts, some of these things. So I've been saying some funky stuff over the past week, but I've come good and I'm happy to be. Great to be here.
Guest today, the CEO of the mob up here, of course, GWS, Dave Matthews will join us.
Am I right in thinking that you've actually been taken inside the bunker and had a look around the Giants?
Wasn't
sort of
supposed
facilities?
To mention that, but...
you might want to say that when we have our pre-go-to-live conversation, yeah. Brian.
Whispering Brian.
Anyway, so... Mark
Brashear. Got off to a good start, Louis. That's what you don't do. Yeah, Mark, just trying to give you an insight.
Thanks, Walter.
Mark Brashear joining us. He's the head of the Coaches Association. Jay-Z, you ran a big story in today's Herald Sun regarding Bluey McKenna and Tony Cochran. Bit of a Barney going on there. We're going to talk about that later on. Just give us the guts of it very, very quickly.
Well, Tony Cochran dropped a bombshell yesterday. BT said the club and the AFL, Gold Coast Suns, made a huge mistake appointing Guy McKenna as their inaugural coach in 2009. Said there were huge cultural problems when Rocket landed in late 2014 and threw Bluey under the bus, I reckon, but we'll probably get to that later. You look like you're a bit sort of worked up about it.
Adam Treloar will also join us a little bit later on as well. Now listen, I have flown from Perth
here we go.
And I got to Perth Airport, and because they've separated the terminals there, Virgin and Qantas, flying Qantas, normally fly Virgin, walk through there's one person in the whole security area, he went, because they had nothing else to do, they said, oh, this guy looks like a likely target, he looks like he's going to fire up, so we'll nail him. They've stripped me, took all my clothes off,
belts, boots, everything.
Out of my bag. So that was just got me on the right path. Then I was about to head up to the lounge. It was closed. What a disaster for a start. So I just had the 3-hour wait down at the McDonald's cafe, which was nice. Because
man of the people.
Fan feed box.
Where do you go if you want a good feed? McDonald's. That's where I went.
One.
So that was good. Then I jumped on the plane.
3 hours.
Unfortunately, I was in the second row of the plane. And it was a small plane. Normally get the big ones back. They've got a bed, the whole thing on the small plane. And I'm thinking, well, I'm 6'3", 6'4", sitting in row 2. The guy in front, he was a jockey. Dwarf, about 75, 80. I said, he won't require a lot of space. And before we'd even taken off, seat in full recline. So I'm now looking at the screen in front of me. It's touching my nose. And I'm going, this can't happen.
Big nose.
I'm saying to myself, I'm no Grant Hackett, but I am about to lean over and give it a twist.
BT, it's ironic. I spoke to you about this topic 2 weeks ago, and you said what I would probably do is put a knee right through the man's spine.
I put the knee in the back. I think because he was so old, he didn't feel it. He had a numbed back.
Probably fixed his posture.
So I kneed at the back. I'm sure he thought it was some sort of steel object. I'm kneeing for about half an hour. Anyway, he got up to go to the toilet, and I said, "You beauty." So I've leaned over. His wife, she's asleep in the seat next door to him. So I've leaned over, and I've tried to hit the button to push the seat forward, and the thing won't go. It's in total lockdown. And I'm fiddling around. The hostess is looking at me going, "What the hell are you doing? What are you pinching out of his seat?" And I said, "I'm not pinching anything. I'm trying to put his seat forward." And then he comes back and he sits down again. This time he whacks a pillow on it, hits me in the head. And just a disgraceful performance. Why do you need to put your seat back? If I don't need to put my seat back, why should he?
Was there an official complaint written, like another previous flight, where you handed an official complaint to a Jetstar lady?
I dealt my own justice on this occasion. So,
Chris, do you think you need to introduce a no-go zone similar to the AFL, like a 10-metre rule for you?
Protected zone. Brian's area.
Yeah.
Should be. Anyway, enough about me, but it was just uncomfortable. Let's talk Richmond and Freo from last night, guys, before we get stuck into all things footy. Duck, I know you saw a bit of the game from back in Melbourne last night. What did you make of the Fremantle-Richmond game? They've won two in a row now, the Tigers three for the year.
Yeah, they have. It was a bit of a battle early, but then obviously ran over the top. Full credit to the Tigers. They've been to hell and back really this year. Everyone's written them off, including us. And I thought Trent Cotchin, their captain, there's been a lot of discussion in and around their leadership. I thought their leadership was really good last week, and he came back wearing the helmet, was sensational last night there. BT, we've always thought they're not a bad team, and they're now showing that when their best team is on the park, I know they didn't have Cotchin last week, they are capable of beating anyone. And I know Freo haven't beaten anyone, but still at home, tough conditions. Hats off to the Tigers. You know, you've got to give credit where credit's due.
Freo, they had a crack, but are they absolutely trying Jay-Z, do you reckon?
I reckon they put the cue in the rack.
Do you?
They did that 4 weeks ago, Jay-Z.
And Barlow in the waffle as well. And this is a real eyebrow raiser. 40 possessions
For Peel.
For Peel. On a wet night at Subiaco, you would have thought he's probably in Fremantle's best players, I would have thought. So why he's not playing him, Ross Lyon, I mean.
Ross Lyon, in an interview last night with the host broadcaster Channel 7, clearly said, did not back away from the very thing you're talking about. He said, "I have had a chat with Michael Barlow. I have told him that I'll be playing younger kids in front of him." And he gave a couple of reasons. He said, "Look, a little bit slow," those sort of things. He didn't agree with me, said Ross Lyon. He was absolutely upfront and honest about it. And he said, "That's just the way it's going to be." So I
cards
took
are
it
marked.
From that conversation that absolutely cards are marked. And Michael Barlow would be looking for a new club.
So a win's a bonus for Freo, but it's about understanding, moving forward, who are the kids that have got something that he's prepared to invest significant game time in and experience that will carry the club forward. Michael Barlow's been a great soldier, but that is it.
The question last night was, from supporters generally, how can they be 9 and zip at the same time last year, and now they're zip and 9? Louis, this is just staggering. How can you lose so much? Okay, Johnson, a key defender.
Yep.
Sanderlands. Sanderlands and Fife, your three best players. Take three best players out
McFarlane
of any side in the competition
well.
And McFarlane. Take three or four best players out of any side in the competition. Does that mean that they all become zip and nine teams or not?
No, not really. I think you've got to go and look at Ross's history. I think the ability, the way he plays his teams and pushes his team, is there any merit in the fact that he gets them to the cliff? And if they don't get it, they then fall off. Because with the Saints, they went and went and went, and then all of a sudden the drop was quite substantial. This year is a little different. They're jam-packed with plus 30s over there. That is the other side of it. And whether you factor in travel as they get older and Pav's still going on, I just think they're not an 0-9 side, but I think once they jumped out to an average start, teams were able to expose their style. And was he a victim of trying to catch up with current-day footy and therefore had it sort of a little bit mixed for the opening month of the season? Teams took advantage. Gold Coast got him over there. And then all of a sudden, when he tried to wrestle it back, took some control back off a couple of assistants, which he nicely put out there. All of a sudden, things weren't just working their way. And all of a sudden, you know, these days, BT, if you don't improve from last year, you're not going anywhere up the ladder. So I think he's a victim of several little things.
Yeah, I agree, Louis. I think it's a combination of all of that. And then once Fife was out for the year and he said that, then it was Q back in the rack. And you know what? We're going to focus on developing this new team, and Barlow's a victim of that. And you'd have to say, and I know, I'm not sure who said it, might have been Matthew Lloyd, you'd have to say that Matthew Pavlich might also be looking at maybe not getting through the whole year, BT.
Yeah, well, I didn't ask that question last night, but it's an interesting one. I did raise
you
it last
scared,
night.
You were
scared? No, I wasn't actually doing the interview. Nicely watched, Duck. but it does raise an interesting question, doesn't it?
It does, because he's clearly not playing great footy, but then again, neither is the whole side. So he's not getting great service down there as a full forward. But, you know, you'd have to wonder whether he's now thinking, you know, do I sort of push myself through a whole year of this, or do I have a game? And it might very well be the derby or the derby later in the year. And I know it's only, I think that fits somewhere around 19 or 20. So it's
around
only
20, Duck.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So it's only a couple short. So, but it might be the way for him to go out. Who knows? But it is going to be, I think that question will be asked more and more as the year goes on.
3-6 are the Tigers. It's probably the story now. Let's have a look at what they've got ahead. So they've won their last two. They play Essendon. I reckon this is crucial coming into the bye for the Tigers, which is in round 13 for them. We're now into round 10 for them. They've got Essendon next week. Dreamtime game at the MCG. Put them down for that, so that gives them four. Then they play North down at Hobart, I think it is. The only Friday night game, or first Friday night game at Hobart, which is interesting. Then they play the Gold Coast before the bye. And then after the bye, they've got Brisbane. Gee, they are a real chance to win three of the next four games, and that gets them back in the hunt.
And Damien Hardwick talked about this last night. We'll go to him now, BT.
We spoke about it during the week. You know, the win was terrific last week, but, you know, what the players wanted to do with it, it could either be, you know, a great win and they don't capitalise on it, or they continue to work it in the game and get the result that was required this week. It's really important to back it up and make sure we gain some momentum.
Damien Hardwick there. So the run ahead looks good for them. They are back being a competitive outfit, I reckon.
Well, we knew that their best footy was right around the mark. We've seen that the past couple of years, although they haven't necessarily produced on final stage. One of the big stories for Richmond for me, and we've talked about list cloggers and, you know, nowhere guys and that middle tier of sort of veteran players, but Sean Hampson has been the unlikely hero for me who has emerged. He was sensational again, I think, last night for the second week in a row. Stitched up a couple of the Fremantle boys without Sanderlands, and a guy whose career was probably at the crossroads has given them real direction in that on-board department, and Anthony Miles has played much better. We spoke about the captain before who was sensational. So Sean Hampson really has played a major hand in turning around the fortunes of the Richmond Football Club. And Jack Riewoldt also, I watched him last night. We talk about leadership, etc. He looks like a fantastic leader to me. Oh, geez, I reckon we underrate the impact this guy has on the rest of his team.
But why are you trying to get rid of Cotchin? What's wrong with his leadership?
Oh, no, I'm just saying that, well, he's not in the leadership group.
Everyone keeps saying this. Jack Riewoldt. Well, he's leading by example. Isn't that good enough for everyone?
Yeah. I just don't reckon he gets the recognition possibly that he deserves.
It was voted by the players, Jay-Z. So the players decided that he wasn't in. They've got a smaller leadership group than most other clubs. Mm. Other clubs have got 15 in theirs. I'm not sure why. But he wasn't voted in their small leadership group. So that tells you. But I agree with you. On field, he has been a tremendous leader. And just on Hampson, we saw him on a Friday night against West Coast. It was probably 4 or 5 weeks ago now. And he was corked everywhere. He stayed on the ground. And I thought that might be just about the end of him, because he was really, really struggling then. He's fought his way back in, and full credit to him, because, you know, once again, maybe one of those players that could have easily said, oh, you know, nah, this is too hard and, you know, turn it up, but he hasn't. So well done.
And I noticed that Tigers, just looking at their draw ahead, we went through their next 5 weeks or so, but you know what? Within 7 weeks, they play Essendon twice.
Leg up.
What do they need, 8 or 9? Out of the remaining 14.
They're 3-6 now.
Yeah.
Hey, BT.
Big effort still.
What did the Dustin Martin say? I was surprised to see him do that sort of end of game interview. He's not normally one who speaks after matches.
And just as he went to say goodbye?
Yeah.
And Matthew Richardson, was it Cameron Ling? Cameron Ling was doing the interview and said goodbye to Dustin Martin. And then Dustin Martin said, oh, by the way, I just want to say hello to my dad. He just said, I just want to say hello to my dad. Mm. I think he used his name, Shane, I think it is.
Yeah, in New Zealand, or NZ. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was just slightly off mark because Lingy had already taken the mic away because he'd said goodbye. So that's what he said. Yeah.
It was interesting.
Anything wrong with that, Jay-Z?
No, not at all. He never does those sorts of interviews. He's one who shies away. But it was interesting, clearly, because it was, you know, potentially premeditated. And I think it was okay. It was just...
I think if there's someone comes to you after the game on field as the host broadcaster, you're compelled to do the interview.
Right.
I don't think there's any getting out of it unless you've got a really legitimate reason why you wouldn't want to, you know, grief or something like that.
It just probably shows again just how much his dad's probably in the forefront of Dustin's mind, given that he's been kicked out of the country. You know, it's a big deal for a young boy. He's very close
Dustin's
to his father.
Been travelling over a bit.
He had one sort of week where he looked really, really flat, and I reckon after that he's
been
just
great.
BT. He's had a very, very good year. It was only just like I said, just that one flat point after obviously that had happened to his family.
Tell you what, Lingy, very lucky he wanted to do it. Otherwise, it would have been another don't argue.
is there anyone as hard to tackle as him?
Oh, he's tough.
No, yeah. He's the best in the comp.
Yep.
He stiff arms everyone and he just bullies his way through. He is sensational to watch and he has been a major reason why the Tigers have got back on track. Make no mistake about that. Hey, before we leave this game, just interesting, you're talking about Ross Lyon before Duck. I don't know what you make of it. Your former teammate Swatter as well. Anthony Rock being positioned front and centre in the box. So every team knows where the camera is and where you position sponsorship signs, et cetera, in the box for when they get a shot of the coaches. Anthony Rock is almost shielding Ross Lyon. What do you make of it?
Well, if you remember rightly, BT, that award-winning segment that we have, Tell Me Something You Don't Know, about 4 weeks ago, I said this was was slightly brewing. And he is, isn't he? Ross was actually in the background of every shot that Channel 7 had on him last night. Rocky's big buff head was front and centre. But I just get the feeling that this is a guy that's been an assistant coach at three different clubs, Anthony Rock I'm talking about. He was under Ross when Ross was at St Kilda. Melbourne, also the Kangaroos, went away and coached three premierships. He's now in Perth as a development coach, which is obviously very, very important. But I get the feeling that that may not be the case next year, given that he is in the box now. We may see Rocky get back into the coaching chair as an assistant in the very near future.
Duck, so who got the lemon and sass from the... Who was the board man? Because this has only happened recently.
I've got no idea.
I think it's Simon Eastor.
Maybe. Is it? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I think Ross has been a little grumpy.
Frank being Frank Farmer, the bodyguard. I didn't imagine Rocky the one to take the bullet, boys.
Out you go, Eastie. Yeah. Good night.
Take your bags.
The Rock's coming.
I'm Russie's boy.
Joining us now is Jude Bolton as well. Bolts, welcome to you.
G'day, boys. It's going to be part of the best Sunday team. How are we doing?
Oh, yeah.
Look,
it's
at this.
Really
that's
well.
It.
That's
it. Except for Louis. Except for Louis. Where's he just jagged in? What's happened here?
Tell you what, boys. I don't know. I get my own show in Adelaide. I ride around the country. I'm here for Brian. Beck and call. If Brian needs a drink, I'll go and get Brian a drink. You know how it works.
Stop that crap, Louis.
Never Bolts, sit in front.
Friday night, great game of footy. Hawthorn and Sydney. And it was a game that you just wanted to watch because you knew these two sides were going to be at it and we weren't let down by that, were we?
Absolutely. I think from, a Swans perspective, the fact that they had a win on the MCG, it's something that they probably need to, you need to get out of your psyche that, hang on, we don't play well on this ground and they were able to do that and certainly the efforts, to nullify someone like Sam Mitchell, who's just had such a dominance over the league over the last...
Okay, so it was Mitchell versus Mitchell, first time he'd been tagged for a while.
For a while, I think Tommy Mitchell's, he's put in a power of work to be able to go in and do that sort of role, that to be trusted enough to quell him at stoppages was big.
So what made Sydney want to tag him when no other side had?
I think just purely because of the influence he has. He's such a good user of the footy, but his hands around the stoppage just bring other players into the game, and I think just that effort to hold him to I think it was 14 or 15 possessions was just enormous.
Hey Jude, Isaac Heaney, he's an absolute star. You've got some stars at that footy club, and you obviously played with a couple of them, Hanbury, Parker, Jack, all of those, Kennedy. But Isaac Heaney, he will be every bit as good as those guys. He's just so clean with his hands.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Duck. It's just he's clean, but he's also so balanced for a young kid. And I mean, we forget that he's only his second year because he looks so composed on the footy field, but he's having enormous influence. I mean, we've seen him kick the five goal bags as well, and he's kicked over four goals a number of times in his career already. But, you know, he'll end up being a really good midfielder.
See, people look at Isaac Henny and they go, oh, he's a great footballer coming along, going to be a star of the future if he's not already. This is probably one of Sydney's greatest stories. This guy comes out of NRL heartland. Is it Newcastle Bolts?
Yeah, Newcastle. A little place called Cardiff, mate. I've actually been to the footy club.
He was gone to rugby, wasn't he? He was gone, and that was ever all he was ever going to play. For football to get hold of him and turn him into an AFL footballer, it's a really big story, I reckon.
Oh, absolutely. To see all you know, the friends at school and things like that absolutely idolise him now, and that's now those eyes are on AFL football, and that's what we want. That's what you want up in this northern markets. That the people, the kids going around, going, hang on, I want that jumper number on my back.
Have you seen Buddy Franklin enjoying his footy as much as he is right now?
Mate, he's in great form, but he's got that, you know, spark and energy about him. There's a bit of swagger. Yeah.
The duck swagger.
I ran into the Essendon boys on the flight back after they played Essendon. He kicked six that night. And Michael Hartley did a damn good job on him early on, but Buddy exploded. And I know the Essendon runner pretty well. And I said, did you get out and, you know, speak to Bud at all during the night? And he goes, I got out one night, one part. And I just went to give Michael Hartley a bit of a tap on the bum, keep him going. And he and Buddy's come over and said, is this guy on the list? He goes, you know, I'm only joking. But it's just enough for him to hear. But he's got that he's in a great headspace, and he's obviously moving seriously well.
Hey, Bolts, Ted Richards, another concussion for him at the weekend. It's a topic that's close to your heart. Do you have any update on his condition? And, you know, do you think there's any chance he might play against North Melbourne this weekend?
It's going to be an interesting one because obviously they ruled him out fairly quickly after that incident. And, you know, when you hit your head on the ground like he did, and he has had previous incidents. So they'll make the right decision. They won't certainly risk him, but it is a big factor in, and it is a short week. They've got the Friday night game, and it's a massive game against North Melbourne, and they'll need him there next week.
You copped a heap of head knocks and said that you suffered a little bit of memory loss, if I'm right, within games. Are you a fan of the mandatory break? You know, if you get a concussion, you sit X amount of weeks out, one or two or whatever it is.
I'm not, because it's sometimes the innocuous ones are the ones that are the worst. The ones that people sit there and go, oh, that was nothing, they're the ones that actually really shake you. And footy, you are really hardened to some of the hits as well. And some of the massive ones, you just get straight back up and you don't worry. And I think it comes down to the doctors. Having a bit of an independent viewpoint would be good. Maybe someone, a medical officer from the AFL, to come in and actually assess someone. But
see this
not
is
mandatory.
The trouble. Sorry, Lou. In diagnosing concussion, the doctor's got to know the patient and got to understand how he normally acts and that's the major judgment. The test is only a very small part of it, but actually knowing the patient, knowing how he speaks, talks, acts, is the real measure of where he's at.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I think, knowing from my previous experience, probably I avoided some of the, you know, going up to the docs when I came off the ground at times and just saying, oh, but I knew I was seeing stars and things like that. And
Do you think you were stupid doing that?
Oh, absolutely. When you look back now, I think I got concussed twice in a game, and I wasn't right for 3 weeks, but I played the next week. You know, I was still a bit ordinary at training and balance and everything.
Does it scare you a bit looking back? Sorry.
You're right, Jason.
It does. You see all the data and, you know, the stories coming out of the States. Of course it does. But at this stage, I'm not feeling any effects or anything like that. So it's more just a case-by-case thing. You see what happened out of with Brisbane and Justin Clark. That was a training incident incident.
You got hit twice in the same game.
Yep.
So a player goes down this weekend, is clearly concussed, and he plays next weekend. It just can't be good for you.
No.
Getting two knocks in a row, it just can't be good.
And no, it can't be, because you're also more susceptible that second time around. And that was certainly what happened when I went back out there after having a bit of a concussion early on in the game against Brisbane years ago.
Any idea what you're doing?
Had no idea, but I felt like I was all right, and then got out there and I had a very, very minor thing that just rattled me again.
Hey, Dr. BT, what you have to... I understand what you're saying, BT, and I understand your concern, like all of us have a concern for the players that get knocked out, but what is for one isn't the same for others. Other guys have, fortunately or unfortunately, harder heads. They don't get knocked out as easily.
I'm talking about the ones that have been knocked out.
Okay, yeah, well, the ones that have been knocked out, and as you said, all of those tests that they do, I mean, there are a lot of people putting their hand up saying an automatic week. You can't tell me if it's a preliminary final or a grand final and a guy passes all the tests and the doctor says categorically, remember, we're putting our trust in this doctor that you're talking about that makes that judgment. So you can't make it an automatic week. Because if that...
Look, I agree with that. And the doctors will tell you, I spoke to Dr. Gary Zimmer at length about this, that, you know, there is no absolute diagnosis on concussion. They can't say that you've definitely had it or you definitely, you know, it's just about monitoring the patient. Everyone's different, as you say, but I just don't like players getting knocked two games
Bristol,
in a row.
The doctors, the best part is the doctors aren't stepping away from the responsibility. If we had a situation where they felt the pressure, and whether it was from within or from the outside, then the AFL would feel a need to come inside, but they're not. They're all more than happy to go, hey, he's mine, I know him well, we'll sit down. We won't take any risks with this young man. So I think it's okay from that point of view. It's all good. Gary Rowan was back the other night. Great story. The buddy kicked it into open space. The Jets went on. It was like the jet car at, you know, at the Easter show. It was magnificent.
Yeah, he's got his body right. Certainly they credit a new weights guy in there that's really sort of, you know, put some good things in place to get he and Benny McGlynn back and in good shape. And, you know, he's just electric. And it adds a different dynamic to the Swans. And, yeah, it changes the look for them.
Hey, Jude, last week, and don't be modest, I would love to know, you're not playing footy anymore, so be totally, you know, frank with us. When Libba is on 17 tackles at half time, are you sitting there praying that he doesn't break your record, or are you hoping that he does?
I was filthy. He's just a ripping player, obviously a ripping bloke as well. And
you didn't want him to break it though, did you?
You want to see him get past it well and truly, but he put the cue in the rack. He was 17 to three quarter time. He just didn't do anything after it.
That is a tackling effort, isn't it? Yeah. And Bolts, I sense that you're really pissed.
It's all good, mate.
All right, Bolts. Well, you've got duties ahead of you today. Thank you very much for giving us a couple of minutes for coming in. Jude Bolton.
Pleasure, boys.
Let's talk a little bit of Collingwood, fellas. They have got things rolling, not unlike Richmond. They've won three of their last five. They are currently 4-5 after 9 rounds of football. And their run ahead sees the Dogs, Port, Melbourne and Frio, along with Carlton. So they have a really favourable draw coming up as well if they can keep the form they're in. What do you make of them?
Well, they just knocked off the premiership favourites, is what they did in pretty convincing fashion, BT. I mean, we talk about Dangerfield and Selwood has been the number one on ball unit. Well, what about Pendlebury and Treloar? Because they were magnificent yesterday, and it just shows how high the Collingwood ceiling is when they are playing well. And we all, wondered what the hell went wrong with them in the first sort of month. But credit to Nathan Buckley, because he's turned this mob around, and most importantly, they've found their spark, Louis. Their appetite for the contest, their hunger. They're winning the hard ball again, using it well. And when a 211-centimetre American starts clunking him like they're the duck, then, you know, it's all happy days. And Jeremy Howe swinging into the back line. He's taking some intercept marks. I just wonder whether this Collingwood side would go into the next month, as you said, BT, you know, thinking they can beat anyone now. I mean, it's a remarkable turnaround for this footy club.
Scotty Pendlebury summed it up best. They finally found a way a day to share and care about each other and worry about what we're doing off the footy. And I know it was only Brisbane and they just slaughtered them. But from to jump out and play like they did, in particularly in that first half, which was just... It was the Collingwood we saw pre-season, wasn't it, boys? And it was the one that got everyone excited about the Pies and where they're going to go. That... Speaking of the big American, Harry Madden says, took me 15 years to learn how to bounce, and this American did it in 5 games on Twitter.
You've been sceptical of this guy, BT. Give the man some credit.
When have I said anything negative about him?
You know, when we've raised before the prospect of recruiting international players and, you know, US guys.
I'm sorry, Jay-Z. Don't put words in my mouth. I haven't been sceptical.
Are you sure? I thought we raised the Carlton's bloke last year, and you're a little bit sceptical about this sort of project type of drafting.
I don't recall that.
I can honestly say, boys, I was the biggest skeptic in the whole of Australia. Yeah. I watched him do that warm-up. I think it might have been at Princess Park or wherever they had that sort of camp. And I watched him bounce the ball and mark it and kick it. And I said, if this bloke plays a game, I'll go he. He had no idea. And he's making us all look like fools. Either the game is a lot easier these days or he is just a... a freak because he's doing stuff, seriously, that guys that have played their whole careers can't do. And
well, let's face it, that bounce, if you look at it head on.
Oh, it was a terrible bounce. Yeah. How it came back to him, I don't know. But but he is BT. It's that he obviously marks the ball really well. So, you know, clearly basketball background and everything else. And it's just a general sporting background. So hand-eye coordination very high. So with that height, and he's got a bit of – what I do like about him, he's got a little bit of natural aggression. He doesn't go out there and throw it, but he just shows people that he's about the place and really has a presence, and he attacks the footy. So if he doesn't mark it, being that height, the one thing he does do is knock three or four over, and the boys that are crumbing know where the ball's going.
Holds the record for the most red cards at his college for soccer, because that was his first thing. It was soccer. They spotted him. He was a train-on player for the girls to do some defensive work against in basketball, and the coach goes, hang on a minute, you can play a little bit. And then all of a sudden, that's how he got the basketball side. Now he's with the footy. But yeah, the record for the red cards in soccer. So he has got a bit of a
strike him as a soccer player.
Bit of a goalie, big type.
One thing that is noticeable is his kicking. And, you know, you see it with the Irish boys as well, that when you have a blank canvas to work from and you can teach someone from scratch, you know what that says? It's a really obvious thing to say, but it says that junior coaches, while we love junior coaches, most of them are voluntary in junior footy, country and city. Most of them, you know, really probably don't know exactly how to teach it because they've been forced into the position. I'm one of those, you know. And what it says is if you get good coaching from the start, it's the key.
Yeah, it's funny. It? Actually, BT, it's interesting you say that. So it's not only coaches but as parents as well. Yeah. I actually had a parent, a young man came up to me recently who's got a son, and he said, look, I don't want to teach him to kick because my kicking style is terrible.
Yeah.
And if I teach him, that's what he'll learn. And he's spot on. That's exactly right. And there are a lot of parents out there, and that's why, you know, AusKick and all of these different things that we have go on. It's imperative that they have the right teachers, BT, not just because if you go to Queensland, BT, if you go to Queensland and also New South Wales, and Louis, you'll back me up here, you go to those clinics and the kids run around kicking the ball still like a rugby ball.
Yep.
They kick it side on, they throw it up, they throw the boot at it. So they're not being taught the right way.
So if you're one of these junior fathers that's sitting in your car right now listening to Triple M Football, that junior footy that's been played all around the nation right now, and you actually know what you're doing, and you're watching a coach who doesn't know what he's doing, get out of your car and actually go and help him. Actually volunteer to become his assistant and say, look,
there's going to be some blues at junior footy.
Just gives you a little snippet as to what Brian does when he sees something not going down too well on a footy ground.
You know what
bugger
I
this,
you know what
I'm
I
coming
do?
Out.
I actually go and help.
Yeah.
Unlike a few of you guys who'd want to sit with your scarf and your cap on so no one recognises you, in your car, popping the coach. I actually get out and say, coach, can I help you?
In fact, coach...
Could you step aside? Because that's what happened at Riddles Creek under 16s that I coach. You know, Crofty, well, he's Humphrey. He doesn't say anything. He's been, you know, Humphrey Bear for a long time. Got no idea. And the big show, he's just interested in himself. He's the real coach. And so just push both of them aside.
Don't call a pie night. Put on the highlights reel and just say, look, have a look at this, boys.
Adam Trelawra's online, part of that Collingwood victory. And he joins us now. Adam, congratulations on the win. And
thank you.
Just on your own form, mate. Just moving along nicely. You'd be right up there in the best and fairest voting. I know you won't say you will be, but I'm telling you you would be. So congratulations on your form.
No, thank you. It was a very, very good performance yesterday by the guys. We felt like it was probably our best four-quarter performance. They scared us a little bit in that last quarter in the start where they, you know, got a little bit of a run on. But to the guys' credit and Frosty won a couple one-on-ones on Hawkins and Howie really come in and helped him out. So to the guys' credit, we really hung in tough. And, yeah, it was a great performance yesterday.
Hey, Adam, I'm not sure whether you're listening or not, but we're just talking about Big Coxie. When you first got to the club, be honest, did you think this bloke's got no chance of playing AFL footy? Has he surprised you?
Oh, mate, yeah, absolutely. He was the first person, one of the first guys I met when I come in. And the thing that I was astounded by the most was his commitment and his determination in getting the best out of himself first and foremost, and then trying to help other people around him. And for someone who's only been playing for 2 years, it's just outstanding. And yeah, to his credit, he deserves everything he's been getting these past few weeks. And it's hopefully going to be a long, great career for him because, yeah, he works his absolute backside off and he's really reaping the rewards at the moment.
So it's the last couple of wins. Has it been as simple as BT and the boys have said 5 or so minutes ago? Has it just been as simple as being manic pressure around the footy and, yep. and back to those real basic skills that we know can bring success?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, one, our work rate has been, I think, up to the standard on a consistent basis. In the past two games and even the games we have won. And then in the games we've lost, it wasn't there on a consistent basis. We'd have it in dribs and drabs and West Coast was the perfect example. But yeah, back to the defensive side, we showed it in the pre-season and in them NAB Cup games that, you know, when our pressure's on, we can really force them to turn the ball over and our offence usually takes care of itself on the back of our defence. But yeah, the last couple of weeks have really been big emphasis on pressuring the ball carrier and then trying to play the ball in our forward half and trying to lock it in our forward half and then trying to hit the scoreboard. And so, yeah, like I said, to the guys' credit, we've done that really well the last couple of weeks and it's going to be a good challenge for us next week against the Doggies.
Adam, you haven't had to wait long to find out what it's like in the spotlight at the biggest club in Australia. When yeah. you're not going well, the heat comes yeah. on pretty quick, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's crazy, mate. Absolutely crazy. I mean, today, even today, we had clinics today and seeing little kids... you know, wearing my number on the back, like, that's the only stuff you used to dream of when you were young, seeing kids look up to you. So it's crazy down here, but I love it. I love the lifestyle. I love being back home, so it's great.
Hey, midfield goals was another positive yesterday. I've just gone through the stats, and there was 8 goals kicked between a collective of 5 players, which is an important asset. And Jesse White's also starting to find a bit of form.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for Jesse, him going back into the VFL, getting a little bit of confidence was the biggest thing for him. And that's what he did. He come in and then went back out, played a couple games of VFL, got a lot of confidence and really gained the trust of the playing group. And then he's come in the last few weeks and really played his role. He's been super, you know, creating contests for us and bringing the ball to ground and then winning one-on-ones and just being real crucial in that area. And back to, obviously, the guys kicking the goals, that's a big key for any team, really. If we can spread the goal kicking load, it goes a long way to winning the game. And I think Pendles kicked 3 yesterday and a lot of the other mids chimed in, so it was a really good effort.
Adam, I reckon yesterday's win was a real game changer for you guys. You knock over the premiership favourites and it says you can beat anyone now. Can you tell us about how this, you know, boosts your mindset, your confidence about really making something significant of the rest of the season?
Yeah, well, you're spot on. I mean, it's always on the back of our defence and it's always been on the back of our effort. And in the games that we've lost at the start of the year, it was always based on our effort. And I think Bucks made a really good point to us afterwards about, you know, you should be... It's great that we've, you know, knocked off the premiership favourites and we've played a really good four-quarter performance, but, you know, you should be a little bit disappointed that we couldn't do it early on throughout the year. And, you know, we were all thinking in the back of our heads, like, he's spot on. Like, what's stopping us from doing that? So I think that's given us a really good confidence, especially yesterday, that going forward, when we actually work hard and we are fully committed to the process, that we can almost beat any team and trust the process. So I think that's the mindset we've got to come with for the rest of the season.
Hey, Adam, in the lead-up to the game, there's a strong argument. Do we tag Dangerfield or do we tag Selwood? You eventually had Levi Greenwood do a great job on the skipper for Geelong yesterday. What was the reason for going with a tag on Selwood versus Dangerfield?
Yeah, well, I think Levi, he always plays on Selwood whenever we play against him, but I think he matches up really well against him. And Selwood's, well, he is their best clearance player in terms of the numbers. He's their number one clearance player, number one centre bounce clearance player. So I think it's important to nullify him because Dangerfield, at the end of the day, you know, he gets 15 to 20 contested possessions a game. So he's always going to get that. It's always going to be hard to stop that because he's so strong in the contest. But I think purely for matchup, Levi matches up really well against Joel and he did a terrific job yesterday on him.
Hey, Adam, was it true that Cox, just getting back to Cox, he had Craig McRae working full-time one-on-one with him when he first arrived?
Yeah, I've had a... Because obviously Craig McRae's not here anymore, so I don't really know him. But yeah, Cocco, I had a good chat with him actually about it, and he said that he owes a lot to his career on where he's at to Craig McRae. I think he's pretty close with him still at the moment. I think he lived with him for a bit and he chats with him quite regularly.
Now, just before Duck asks the last question, I just want to, just a little one here. Just you're a bit of a stats man there, Adam. You like your stats.
I try to study the opposition as much as I can, mate.
And yourself.
Not myself.
Is it true? You're not married, Adam. You've got a girlfriend, right?
No, I'm not married. I've got a fiancée, yep.
Yeah, and she loves stats too, yeah?
I don't know who was that.
Where are you going, Brian?
I just heard that both of you are into your stats. With that because
I've got no idea,
part of professional footy. What are you averaging at the moment, Adam?
Man, what am I averaging, man? I've got no idea.
Oh, come on.
I've got no idea. I actually literally have no idea.
Oh. Adam, tell us about...
Adam, hey, Jay-Z, don't you listen to the rundown, buddy. It's the Ducko's question. hey, Adam, I don't know why I've given this some thought, but I saw a thing that you did on Channel 7 earlier in the year, and you've got all of these superstitions. Now, you've got a zillion of them, and I don't know why I think about this. Yep. One of them shaving your legs in the bath before every game, and I just think to myself, what about the interstate games and there's no bath in the hotel rooms?
No,
what do you do on that?
It's generally they generally have a shower bath combo, but if it's not, it's just a shower. So it
only
matter,
the five and a half star ones.
Yeah. So how do you honestly do every single one of those every week?
Honestly, I promise you guys, no word of a lie, and even my missus can verify for that, but it was just something I did. I did it one time in my first year. It would have been, might have been my sixth game, and I just did it, and we played a good game at the time playing for the Giants, and I just thought, I was going to do this, and then I did it, I've stuck with it.
It's working for you. Keep it up.
Thank you.
Adam, before we leave you, any chance the Thunder to beat the Golden State Warriors?
Oh, mate, I'm all over that. We will beat them. I'm telling you. We're top world and we'll beat them.
When's it
I'm
start?
I'm telling everyone at the footy club that we're actually going to beat them.
When's game three?
Tomorrow.
All right. So,
guys, I'll be praying that we win.
Game four. Isn't it?
Yeah. Interesting. I don't think they will, Adam. But anyway, you with your shaving and stats would know better than I do.
I'll tell you later. How much points Kevin Durant's averaging.
How many?
In the playoffs, he's averaging 28, and he averaged 28 for the season, so he's going well.
Very good.
Yeah, but they got... anyway, look, they won't get the job done, but...
They will.
All right, mate. See you, stats man.
Well, last night on Triple M Footy Boys, we called the best start to the Kangaroos season in the history of the club. 9 straight wins. They defeated the Blues by 67 points in the end. And one man who was having a very good season himself, working beautifully with Toddy Goldstein, is Jack Zeeble. He joins us. Welcome, Jack. Congratulations on a terrific start to the year.
Thanks, boys. How are we going? All right?
Yeah, we're going really well. And I would imagine that the feeling within the four corridors or four walls of the Kangaroos would be pretty good right now, given the fact that you are zip.
So
and
is that
not...
walls, corridors?
Yeah, walls.
Or
could be
we?
Anything. But you know what I mean, Brian. The feeling within the rooms of the Kangaroos, Jack, would be pretty good.
Obviously, it's a positive start to the year. Considering the last couple of years, we've been very slow out of the block. So we made a big focus this year to try and make sure that we could get off to a good start, and that's what we've done. But all it's done is just give us a good platform for the rest of the year, and we've got a pretty big 6 weeks coming up, which we're really looking forward to test ourselves against some of the best in the competition.
Jack, I just want to go back half a step to last week after halftime. Obviously very poor. Would it be fair to say that you copped a fair spray at three-quarter time, and then after the game in that against Essendon, was that a bit of a catalyst to make sure that you didn't take the Blues easy this weekend?
Absolutely. I think we've obviously let ourselves down. We thought our first half against the Bombers was really good. To come out in the second half and play the way we did was quite disappointing. And that's not what we wanted to stand for as a team. And I think the coach let us know at three-quarter time and after the game and throughout the week, we understood where we went wrong after our review and the areas that we needed to work on as well. And I thought on Saturday night or last night, we put our probably first four-quarter performance of the year together. And it was nice to do that. And not rely on sort of a few guys either. We all shared the load, and it was a pretty complete performance, which is good.
I'm not a massive Ruckman fan, but you can't help but be impressed of Goldie. What's he doing better this year than what he was doing last year? Clearly getting forward, spent some time in the forward line yesterday, kicked 3 goals, kicked 5 down in Tassie. Is his ruck work better? Is it just the fact that he's pushing forward now and hitting the scoreboard more?
I think a bit of both there. He's obviously been a great ruckman for the last 3 or 4 years, an All-Australian ruckman from last year. He's centre bounce works first class and around the ground stoppages. Opposition teams are really looking to try and quell his influence by going third man up a lot, which is probably credit to him to sort of demand that much respect. But I think he's going forward as well. I think the majority of the time he's been kicking the goals is still from the ruckman position as well. So obviously on the weekend he played forward a little bit more, but I think when he kicked 5 goals in Tassie earlier in the year, he was playing as a genuine ruckman, which is pretty amazing. So his ability to get forward on his opponent and really challenge him is one of his strengths that he's taken to a new level this year.
Jack, did any of the North boys just happen to wander past Daniel Gorringe and suggest to him that he's maybe having a tough day at the office?
No, I don't think we did. I don't think we need to.
It was pretty clear.
No, I think obviously it's a pretty big challenge for anyone that comes up against Goldie, and he's got a pretty big target on his back in terms of being one of the best ruckmen in the league. So other ruckmen that come up against him really keen to sort of give it all they've got against him. So he does really well coming up to that level every week and competing at his lofty standards.
I think I saw a couple of the North Melbourne boys just go over and have a chat to him. Hey, do you believe you can win this year's premiership?
Obviously, we have confidence in our ability. I think, we don't want to look too far ahead. And we've set a goal at the start of the year to try and get to 12 wins as quick as possible. This week, the quickest way to do that is this week against Sydney, which is a massive game for us against the informed team of the competition in the Swans. And we've got some really good self-belief in our footy club and what we can do as individuals and as a team. And I think our game plan has stacked up in some big games as well in the past in finals. So we don't look too far ahead, but we understand what we can do and how we can do it.
Jack, are you frustrated though there's not a lot of love? You're 9-0, can't do much more, yet there's not a lot of love coming from the media and outside supporters that you can
bristle.
Go all the way. Bristle in particular.
He's leading it.
He's waiting.
Yep.
No, I actually quite like it. It's quite nice to sort of fly under the radar a little bit.
Now, Jack, I'm a big supporter. Now, listen, you can only play the teams that are put in front of you.
Oh, here we go.
And you are 9-0. But I don't want you to take one game at a time. I want you to take it in a block of six. You have got Sydney, which is just going to be an unbelievable game coming up this Friday night. Richmond, Geelong, Hawthorn, Adelaide, West Coast over the next 7 weeks. In amongst that is a bye as well. You already know where you're at. You're a contender this year. There's no question. But after that group of games, you're really going to be know where you are, aren't you?
Exactly right, and it's exciting for us to think that we're going to play the next 6 weeks, probably the next top six sides or there amongst. So it's good for our team, and to sort of obviously play Sydney up there this week against Sydney in Sydney, it's a great challenge. We're really looking forward to it, and vice versa for the rest of those 6 weeks as well. Playing against the good sides, it's what you want to be as an AFL team and what you want to bring yourself up to.
Is Lachie Hansen in the best 22, Jack?
I think he is. When he's fit, he's obviously this year had a pretty horrid run with a bit of injury, and he got concussed a couple of weeks ago, so the club's been fairly cautious with him. But definitely we can use him floating across, sort of third man up, down back, and we understand and watched him play last year. He's had a massive influence on our year, so we really look forward to getting him back.
Just run through those who aren't in the best 22, Jack.
Hey, Jack, do you like having your little cameos up forward, hit the scoreboard again? What sort of balance do you like with your midfield pushing forward and then pushing the big units out of the way and say, let me be the main man for a little bit?
I don't know if the big guys like that, but it's obviously nice to get down there. There's a few midfielders that do it in the competition and within our side, so it probably varies week to week as well, who comes in, who goes out, and what structure we play, but whether it be, I don't know, 5 minutes a quarter down there or a little bit more or a little bit less, and I just do what the coach tells me to do, so just keep him happy.
Ben Jacobs out of that side has been a fantastic tagger, taking the opposition best on ballers. You play against a side that has got an abundance of absolute guns through the middle of the ground. Do you try to find someone to play a similar role, or do you now say, okay, no, we just bring someone in and take them head on?
It's an interesting thought there, Duck. Obviously, it's a pretty big loss having Benny Jacobs come out of the side with his foot, and it's important that, we get a guy that comes in and plays his role. I think Trent Lamont played his role really well last night. I was an inside midfielder, and he might have been his fifth or sixth game, so there's plenty of upside for him, and whether the coaches look to play a negating role with someone else, that's for them to sort of figure out. But for us as midfielders, we go in there with an aggressive mindset every week to try and play our best footy and take the initiation of the contest and try and get the ball forward whether that's against the best midfield in the comp or someone who's not. So nothing much really changes for us with the same mindset we go into games with.
Best start in the history of the club, Jack, and a great six-week period to come as well. Congratulations on the form so far. Good luck with it.
Thanks, boys.
Jack Zeebel joining us on Triple M Footy there.
Still to come, Mark Brayshaw, the CEO of the Coaches Association.
And I want to talk to you guys as well about what you thought about last night's decision, the deliberate rush behind, and also the way the umpires reacted immediately. Hayden Kennedy, we'll talk about it shortly, but I thought it was well handled. Hey, I don't know whether you saw it last night. There was a deliberate rush behind awarded against the Fremantle Dockers. Spur was the offending player. And we hadn't seen it played. I can't remember seeing it being paid since the law was actually introduced, stopping Hawthorn from doing it in grand finals, I think, or finals a few years back. But I hadn't seen it paid since then. It seemed a strange decision. It was Razor Ray Chamberlain that was involved in the decision. And what we found out last night on Channel 7 is we immediately rang the umpires coach Hayden Kennedy, who was absolutely brilliant in explaining the rule to us, number one, and number two, explaining the process of what had happened during the week. Now, what had happened during the week was a memo was sent out to all clubs saying that that very thing that happened with Spur last night happened with McKenzie of North Melbourne last week.
West Coast.
Yeah, and that if it happened again this week, they would be paying a deliberate rush behind. It was almost identical for Spur last night. And they simply said, OK, well, that's it. And it was explained beautifully. I don't know why the umpires don't get on the front foot more often like that.
Look, it was good. I was watching your coverage, BT, and Lingy and the boys were going, oh, that's a little bit stiff, and you're all questioning the merit of it. But once that came through...
They should have briefed us before the game, though, and told us.
Absolutely. Anything that's a hot and something to watch, and especially if we're wanting umpires shown in the positive light, if you're aware of that stuff, instantly you jump on board and go, no, that's the new rule. He's in all sorts of trouble here. Well played, Ray. Good job.
Yep.
But the one the week before, too, was the standout. I was over in the West on that one, and same deal, probably a tad further out with McKenzie, so... It's such a bad look, and the fact that they've given a heads up, I think it's a really good work by both the umpires and the AFL.
And by the way, I think it's the correct call.
It's absolutely the right call. If that just went gone out of bounds with a new interpretation, we would call it deliberate. So why not just keep it consistent? It's exactly the right call.
Yeah, BT, I thought there's been plenty this year, not just the example that they showed there, the kick off the ground. There's been numerous where guys have not kicked it off the ground, but just deliberately under no pressure. And I'm talking, you know, players not within 10 or 15 metres, just walking the ball through. So I don't think just the kicking, they've got to tighten it up all round because they've obviously tightened up the deliberate out of bounds. It's about time they've got onto this.
Well, the focus has been so much on the deliberate out of play around the ground that one's sort of been left to its own demise for a minute, whereas now you've got that one example and it's sort of back on the radar, which is good.
Hey, flying the flag, Jay-Z. Yeah. Last night, Jonas and Gaff. Tell us about it.
Well, Tom Jonas poleaxed Andrew Gaff in his poorest circumstances I've seen. Gaff was going back with the ball, went back with the flight, totally unprotected, arms above his head, and from behind, Tom Jonas comes straight through and smashed him with his elbow. So he not only just ran through him, boys, but came through with the elbow. For me, this makes it worse than the May hit on Steph Martin, which got 5 weeks a little bit earlier. So because of the use of the elbow, it's one thing to run through a bloke, but when you also stick out the elbow, which cops him in the back of the head, we were talking about Jude Bolton about concussion earlier. This is exactly the type of poor behaviour that needs to be stamped out. The MRP needs to send a very strong message.
Could it
here
go straight to the tribunal?
Yeah. It'll be graded high, intentional, high contact and high impact. So they could go to severe impacts, but I think it's probably just high. Gaff didn't play any further part in the game. So look, it's definitely going to be 5 or 6 matches. Do any of you guys agree with that? You think it should be less
straight
than that?
To the tribunal?
Yeah,
Jay-Z, I will say one thing, and Graham Corns, I don't know whether you've heard, seen the text that he has sent out in defence, which is sort of quite astounding. But I will say one thing, with the Stephen Martin bump and the May, That was almost, well, he won't say premeditated, but Stephen had time to think about what he was going to do, BT. I don't think when you do that, and by the way, he hit him with an elbow, he hit him high, he's in massive trouble. But it is a split second decision, BT, where you're going to spoil, you realise you're late, you turn, and yes, it's hit him with the elbow, yes, it's hit him high. So for all of those reasons, I agree with you, Jay-Z, but it's not premeditated, it's not a deliberate act. So take all of that out of it. This is not a malicious, deliberate king hit or anything like that.
So how do they grade it, Jay-Z? What happens from here?
It's either intentional or reckless. Yeah. Intentional or careless, I should say. So they'll grade it intentional. What part of the body? It's obviously the head, so it's high. Yeah. And then the impact is either low, medium, high, or severe.
Well, it's got to be high.
Yeah, so that's straight to the tribunal, as you said. Yeah. But the postscript in this instance, I think, is just as interesting because Louis's got the replay at the moment. Basically, both sides have come in to remonstrate. And fair enough, they fly the flag. Adam Simpson said after the game that the AFL should waive all of the Malay fines for the players because what the West Coast boys were doing was just something that you would expect when your mate's car straight on the ground and someone's just knocked him out. So it poses the question, fellas, should you fly the flag? Should the AFL be fining players for this? Because it'll be a $30,000 or $40,000 fine. You know, and just what do we think of flying? Is it necessary, this sort of behaviour?
It's a good point. It's a very good point that Simo makes, especially when it's something like this and you see your teammate absolutely KO'd. I think you're in every right to go in and defend and look, let's be honest, there was a bit of push and shove, but I think you should be allowed to do that. I'm actually on Simo's side with this.
It wouldn't be the Australian nature just to see your teammate and not react in any way, would it? I mean, you'd do the same thing in the street.
Yeah, it's one of those. And like,
I don't mean react with a fist.
No, that's right. No,
I just
one
mean react with
exactly.
Some
and there were shove. No punches thrown, BT. You know, back in the day, and I know we're not in the day, but back, you know, years ago, if that happened, guys would run in and they'd actually throw punches and the guy that actually did the act would end up hurt himself. That wasn't the case. I mean, it's just run in, it's a show of strength. You know what? We're here for our teammate who, by the way, gets carted off on a stretcher. I think that that's all fair.
Bruce, I reckon the AFL have emasculated the game and the player so much where you can't bump, you can't shirt front, you can't do all the wonderful things that used to be around. And that's great. They're protecting the head and the players, but the moment something like that happens, you have to. It's a physical game. It's about who's bigger. It's a bit more about bluff and intimidation. You've got to be able to get in and go, hey, we're not really going to tolerate that without throwing anything. But you've got to be able to get in there and go, mate, we're going to rub your head into the dirt for a little bit and have you gasping for air for about 3 seconds because we didn't like what you did because we're now one short. You've got to be able to show that to tell your mate you're protecting him. Yeah. We love you, mate. And this guy,
because I tell you the other thing that happens is, if something like that happens and one of your teammates did that and the opposition player was Andrew Gaff and no one came back, you know what I'd be thinking? You know what we'd be saying? They're weak. Yep. They're mentally fragile. We've got it over this group.
Absolutely.
But the AFL also doesn't want this type of behaviour on their footy field because they're still trying to grow the game and get it into the hearts and minds of those other decision makers and maybe the mums of the future generation. We play a combative sport and I still think that there is an opportunity because all we're talking about is pushing and shoving. Yep. No one's clubbing anybody. No. So it's a game built on emotion and support.
For anyone out there to say, oh, what does the push and shove achieve? Hey, I don't reckon you've been in that situation. Yep. You've got to fly the flag. Powder finger about to play over here. Oh, no, it's not. It's some other band. they're just setting up over there on the other side. Does Dennis Pagan Swatter, does he have any great stories of Dennis? Did he ever encourage you to fly the flag?
I'm sure Duck will remember this. I think Duck was a practice match at Arden Street and Tony Shaw used to terrorise us as a young group of players. And
hang
I remember
on,
going
let me
out,
just jump in. You're a glider, Shantuzzi's combo.
No. And Dennis said to us, Tony Shaw used to give us an awful spray from the opening bounce. And Dennis said before we went out this day, I don't care what he said or who starts anything, but if any Collingwood player starts anything today, it is everybody in there and you show support. And then Tony Shaw started. 18 blokes with North Melbourne jumpers just came in and started terrorising. And his opening words were, shit, where'd you blokes get a heart from?
mind you, Tony Shaw's 4'1" and there was 18 blokes under him. It wasn't exactly courageous, Swatter.
That's why Sholey was in there.
Yeah, exactly.
He was very courageous.
And Mighty Mick.
Bristol, did you wander down from the paddock, the top paddock?
They came into his paddock. It was a different story. Yeah. Like the little bloke in row A1 this morning.
Yeah.
Put his seat back.
Knee in the back.
But BT, you remember the one thing, like, and we've all been in situations. I remember a day where I got reported for hitting Peter Satori at the old Witten Oval. Now it was something that, you know, I got 3 weeks and I deserved the 3 weeks for getting it, BT. But if they hadn't have come in and supported and, you know, had a go at me, that's exactly what you think. If you do something silly in a split second on a footy field and no one comes to you, then that's the exact reaction. It's like, oh, these blokes are, you know, they've got no ticker. Mm. You know, you expect to be retaliated against.
Duck, and the other one too, if nothing happens then, it festers until another moment where it comes along and you're potentially making things worse because next time somebody gets opened up, they go, right, I'm going to get a square up here because I'm not thinking straight. Whereas if you've had the push and shove, as you know, Bristol, you gasp for a bit of air once you've been involved in that action and it takes a while to settle back down.
I remember at Bombay Rock on the Gold Coast when we supported each other. Cleaned up the six Maoris.
Yeah. Six.
We don't.
But the other one too, and on a serious note, the reason the AFL will not tolerate any of it, you've got the one punch, coward punch situation happening on our streets on a regular basis.
And that's where it's blurred for the current generation.
Absolutely.
So you sort of say, well, how do you not fire the whole thing up and make it worse than
but
it is?
But we don't have that in the game anymore, though. That's been eliminated out of the game. And if it does happen where somebody does punch someone else, you're so surprised. But all we're saying and all we're seeing is players going in and remonstrating. They're just showing a level of support for their teammates.
And Swatter, and that's exactly what you would want if you were out in the street and you were with a mate and he was getting in trouble or before he got in trouble. Not go in and remonstrate and throw punches or do all of that, but go in and support your mate. Exactly what I'm talking about on the football field. Go in and make sure you calm the situation down. Get everyone out, and but at the same time, show support for him so that you know he doesn't get any more hurt. BT,
where's the coin go, Jay-Z? Where does all that melee money, Duck? Where does that all go?
Well, it goes to the coffers of the AFL. We know that it should be going to a charity.
Yeah,
I've always said that, and the players will. You know, I know they, you know, out of their pocket, $2,000 or $3,000 that they get fined each is not a great big deal, but they would much prefer that money go to a charity of that particular club's choice and or the AFL.
Gold Coast, a big story, Jay-Z. You were talking about it through the night. Run us through what's happened.
Well, the chairman of the Gold Coast Suns, Tony Cochran, hasn't been in the job too long, but he dropped a bombshell yesterday, fellas, because in a massive go at the AFL, he said the league appointed the wrong man as the Suns' inaugural coach in Guy McKenna. Back in 2009, he said the club essentially really suffered through his inexperience at the head of a young, impressionable playing group. Tony Cochran said that there should have been an experienced figure such as Lee Matthews, and he lauded the decision the Giants and the AFL made to bring in Mark Williams and Kevin Sheeney, really experienced figures to help them guide them through their first couple of years in the AFL.
Now that's a bit brutal on Bluey, isn't it?
Well, it was a massive spray, and at the end of a 20-minute interview, there's been plenty of people comment in the past 24 hours that it was a bit unnecessary, really, to dig up that old grave.
Unnecessary and perhaps wrong.
Well, you're right, BT, because at the end of 2014, when Gary Ablett was still playing, Gold Coast was inching towards their first finals berth. You remember Ablett was the best player in the competition. He hurt his shoulder against Collingwood, and they just missed out from there. So you could say that Gold Coast has played its absolute best footy and nearly played in September under Bluey. Now, he's a great bloke, Bluey. I think he's well-liked. But it was a savage assessment of what happened. Duck, your take?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was out of line. And if you look at, I'd take it back to his comments that he made about you know, Kevin Sheed and Mark Williams. By the way, great sign-ups for GWS. But Bluey McKenna, in the first 4 years, BT, had more wins than Kevin Sheedy.
I thought he did a brilliant job.
Yeah, absolutely, did a brilliant job. And you know what? The one thing where you blame a coach for their culture. I mean, you can go back and look at Woosha, who won a premiership, and look at has happened since there, and we don't talk about players. As a coach, you're there to coach them as a football team. So let's judge them on that, not on that particular culture, what we now know may have been a bit of an issue. Because at the end of the day, BT, the senior coach, they're the last person to know about all of that sort of stuff.
And that same culture is probably happening at every club, Doug.
Yeah. Well, you know, I just thought it was, I thought it was out of line. And I think Bluey McKenna would be entitled to be very, very disappointed, as I know a lot of people are.
Shouldn't the bigger question, BT, Swatter and Jay-Z, Duck being asked, is the last 2 years have been ruined through injury.
Yeah. Oh,
so
no
all
doubt.
Of a sudden you come off the back, Rocket gets up there, we're expecting great things, he's going to add some few tricks, he's going to jazz him up to be able to play the competitive footy. All of a sudden 1 year you get cut down, yep, you can blame bad luck. It's happening again. You look at it again, they lost another two yesterday, one concussion, another one a soft tissue, a knee. You go, what is going on in the off-field side of the professionalism that is not allowing these guys? We even heard the story of Swallow seeking treatment in Melbourne. I mean, that's the big area for me that you have to really fix, because no one's going north if you can't get us right and give us the avenues to play good footy.
There's still problems. We've got the CEO of the AFL Coaches Association, Mark Brayshaw, on the line. Mark, would you cough on your Wheaties this morning when you read the comments?
Yeah, look, I did, to be honest. I thought the Suns president missed a perfectly good opportunity to keep his mouth shut, to be honest. I thought his comments were unfair, unhelpful, unprecedented, and unbecoming of one of the 18 presidents.
What was your assessment of Bluey's job up there at the Suns? Obviously, it wasn't an easy job. He was an untried coach. As we were saying before, nearly got them to finals. So how would you reflect on his role there?
Look, I'd rather not. I mean, I think it's just unfair to compare any first-year coach to Kevin Sheedy and Mark Williams. Goodness, you know, they've coached, I don't know, 1,000-odd games and 4 premierships. So I just think that's a pretty harsh call. You know, Bluey, like all guys starting I was at Fremantle when we started. It's actually very, very difficult. I think people underestimate it. It seems to me to highlight the stress these coaches are in, whether they're experiencing successful or first-year coaches. I think it's a bloody hard job. I've been around footy for a little while now, but in the last year or two doing this role, I've become aware of it, and I thought it was really a tough call and unprecedented. I cannot remember any president feeling the need to put the boots into a previous
Mark, it's
coach
dumb.
Like this.
It's dumb. It's just a dumb tactic from them. And it's untrue.
Yeah, well, look, as I said, it's unhelpful. I don't think it edifies the discussion at all. And it's just unfair. And it's a very difficult position to be a senior coach, even the very best of them, with whom I share a good friendship, Clarko and Horse, for example. I mean, I see how much pressure they're under, let alone starting a new club, let alone doing it for the first time. So I think the fellow was out of line, and you guys can determine it. Look, I'm not going to judge, whether he's right or wrong in terms of the culture. I just think that's a real, real cheap shot, and it's very hard to compare somebody in their first year to a titan of the game like Kevin Sheedy.
Is it worthwhile having a chat with Tony? Will you follow this up with him, Mark?
No. I've got my job is to try and help the coaches. The presidents are, but my view about a president, and I know one of them pretty well, is they should be seen but not heard.
well, that's not working. No.
Yeah. So it's a tough, I've got my hands full with the coaches, and I just thought it was he missed a perfect opportunity to keep his mouth shut. So that's about all I'll say.
Good on you, Mark. Appreciate your time.
Right, fellas. Cheers.
Mark Brayshaw, the head of the Coaches Association, joining us.
They've had 5 changes head of fitness in 6 years at the Gold Coast Suns. And I'm not sure that it's Bluey's responsibility solely for the recruiting. There's also some suggestion, BT. I mean, Marcus Ashcroft's been a great player for a long period of time for the Brisbane Lions over there, but when you think about some of the football operations managers who have been around for 20 or 30 years, he's a relatively inexperienced man.
I would have thought Marcus Ashcroft was a great player, and well, he wasn't a great player, he was a really, really good player. But he's a really straight sort of operator, and you sort of need those guys. But you also need a guy that's willing to sit at the bar and have a beer with these
guys.
He's
got a feel for what's going on within the group.
Understand them. For me, Marcus, I think, would be the sort of guy that'd be in bed by 8, be up running a marathon at 6, and he'd see the boys coming home, not going out. And so he wouldn't know what's happened while he's been
Duck,
asleep.
Duck, have you got time to be a list manager to get up there and help out?
But, that's what I think of it. But just I'm hearing all sorts of horrible things out of the Gold Coast at the moment, that coaches are perhaps looking elsewhere. I'm hearing that Gary Ablett with a concussion during the week, whether he actually spent a lot of time at the football club, I'm not sure about that. I haven't been able to confirm or deny whether that is the case, but that's what I'm hearing. So there's some ugly stuff coming out of the Gold Coast as we speak. I think Campbell Brown is going to join us in a moment to try and clear a bit of this up.
And I think the real pointy head of this issue at the moment is the futures of some of their best players. We'll list 6 of them now. Jager O'Meara, Dion Prestia, Tom Nichols, David Swallow, Sam Day, Adam Saad. Right now, I think all these guys have got for sale signs on them. Clubs are chasing these guys. And look, if they lost 3 or 4 of these guys, and I think Dion Prestia and Jager O'Meara will definitely go, Swallow's contracted for next year, that would be a hammer blow to this footy club.
It'd be enormous. Why is it when it goes pear-shaped up there, it goes pear-shaped? 3 wins, they go to Brisbane, they have a Q clash, big Stevie May does what he does.
Hey, look,
they get tipped out of the boat. All of a sudden, it just goes
Second year in a row, just completely not slow burn.
We've got
BT
one
just gone.
We've got the good thing about Gold Coast and GWS, we're able to compare because they started what a year after each other. So all of a sudden you're able to compare the models, and they both did it differently. Have a look what GWS today have done. They're absolutely striving forward at the moment. They surrounded these really young players with some Mumfords, some
genuine
Shaws,
leaders,
some Callan Wards, some Griffin, all these sort of players. Whereas Gold Coast didn't elect to go in that direction, did they?
Hey, BT, the other big thing is you're watching a team probably out there in front of you now, the reserves, GWS reserves, who have got some real talent, are going okay in the NEAFL. Gold Coast are on the bottom, have not won a game. So, and I know they've got a lot of injuries, but this is a club right now that started from scratch, got all of these concessions that are almost ready to rebuild BT without even having reached a pinnacle. And if they have to do that, they're going to be down where they're at for a very, very long time. And I know they've got a lot of good players on the injury list, but as Jay-Z just said, if some of those players leave, then this club doesn't even get off the bottom before it has to rebuild.
Yeah. Here's the thing, though. I think the AFL will make concessions for Gold Coast if they find themselves in this position. If they lose four of those six players, they'll keep giving them more concessions. Yeah.
Talking about the talent, sorry, BT, just at GWS, Adam Tomlinson's just had 52 possessions, 8 marks, 3 tackles and a goal. This is in the NEAFL, just out in front of us. This is a guy who can't get a game at GWS Seniors.
Campbell Brown is on the line, Triple M Zone, of course, and former Gold Coast player himself. Spent up a fair bit of time up there, still in contact with a lot of people up there, would know a little bit of what's going on. Brownie, I know you've just finished your Channel 7 VFL duties. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, BT boys, how are you?
What's going on up there, mate? Take us through what you're hearing about Gold Coast at the moment.
Oh, it's interesting, isn't it? At the moment, I was asked to write a piece during the week, and probably the main thing that I wanted to stress in that was, you know, they have had a really bad run of injuries for 3 years now, and a lot of people say, geez, it's bad luck. And I don't subscribe to that. Yes, there's always going to be contact injuries in sport, the Gary Ablett shoulder and the O'Meara knee and things like that, but the amount of soft tissue injuries that they've had in the last 3 years has been absolutely ridiculous. Like they almost can't field a full side in the next couple of weeks because they just keep losing players. And I put that down to the turnover rate of fitness staff over the last 6 years. They've had 5 heads of fitness, and for all different sorts of reasons, they get sacked and get moved on, and they bring in someone else. They've had 3 different strength and conditioning coaches in the last 3 or 4 years.
Gee.
And the high turnover rate of those guys, it puts different stresses on the young kids' bodies because, as you know, players love continuity. They love doing the same training over again. And when you get guys in with different theories on, you know, repeated speed and aerobic and altitude and things like that, it takes you 12 months for your body to adapt, and then you're changing it all over again. And I think that's one of the major reasons why we've seen so many injuries to a lot of the young guys.
What have you heard this week about, if anything, Brownie, about Ablett and the concussion? There's talk that did he appear often enough or didn't he? Heard anything?
No, I haven't heard anything. I mean, there's been talk up there for a little while about Gary and will he play through injury. He prefers not to. He doesn't take the pain killer medications, anti-inflammatories, things like that really helps the body get right. And I think as a professional athlete, you need them to survive from the brutal game. There's questions whether he likes to put himself through the pain barrier with his injuries. And not suggesting that he wasn't concussed on the weekend, that's pretty clear cut. But the course of this year, he's carried a few little niggles.
Brownie, you were there in the McKenna period. Tony Cochran, the president of Gold Coast, has come out and said that was a waste of time, should never have happened. What's your thought?
Oh, it's always, everyone's a genius in hindsight, BT. I reckon an experienced guy, an experienced, you know, the way GWS did it, they got Sheedy, and then Sheedy went out and got Mark Williams. Both of those guys were senior coaches and premiership coaches in their own right. They got Gubby Allen as a head of football, and those guys would have seen and done it all in the game. Gold Coast went for an untried guy in Bluey. They went for a guy like Marcus Ashcroft that has never been a head of football before. And, you know, they're like players. They're like young players and young coaches as well coming through the ranks. They learn as they go. They make mistakes. Just because you're a good footballer doesn't necessarily make you a good coach or administrator. You learn as you go, and you know, maybe in hindsight, that was a better option, getting some senior coaches, or at least having a senior guy up there, because Malcolm Blight, he was on the board in the first year, never seen, and then he moved to the Gold Coast and became more hands-on in the second, third and fourth year. But certainly he helped Louis enormously in the second and third year, but he wasn't really there in the first year.
Appreciate your time, Brownie. Thanks for joining us.
No, good on you, boys. Have a good call.
Joining us now is the CEO of GWS, Dave Matthews, has walked into the commentary box. Good afternoon and welcome.
Thanks, Brian.
Good little setup going on here. Team in good form at the moment. The sun is shining. No wind. What a day.
Beautiful
two
day.
Two top sides.
Beautiful day in Sydney, which is probably why these players are all signing on and staying on. It's just a great place great place to live. I know you've enjoyed it today. And, yeah, two good sides. I mean, as you said this morning, third versus fifth. Giants, Bulldogs, we probably wouldn't have expected that at the start of the year, but we're developing a pretty good rivalry, the two of us.
So how much easier is it to retain and keep everyone happy when the W's are going next to each game?
Oh, a lot easier, I think. I think, you know, a lot of the young players last year, we had a big, big retention agenda with a number of young players we had to extend, and what they wanted to see was some success on the horizon, and hopefully our start to the year has vindicated their decision.
You watched a lot of footy, Dave. You've been around the game for a long time. Do you look at your boys the way they've started this season and think they can genuinely win this year's premiership?
I don't think about it in those terms, Joe. I guess we look at it as being, can we improve on last year? And improvement on last year, you know, really does mean playing finals. We won 11 games last year and probably needed 13, but ran aground mid-year when we had all those injuries against Collingwood. We've started well again, but who knows, the next month's very difficult. So, you know, the fixture in the next 4 weeks is pretty difficult. So we'll see where we end up. But, yeah, we just want to keep showing signs of improvement.
Talking about Adam Treloar, in fact, we were talking to him just before. How, you're probably reluctant to let him go or disappointed. How do you weigh up that trade? Because Collingwood are talking about him as their potential best and fairest leader at this stage.
Oh, he's a terrific young player. He's an outstanding young man, Treloar. And, you know, I think in the end our trade there got a great result for the club, probably a great result for both clubs.
And was there any issue for you guys in terms of the surgery, not being told about it, him being sent down to Tasmania? Clearly Collingwood had some advice on that part. How angry were you about that?
Well, not really angry, just I found it very unusual. I found it very unusual that a player would have surgery when he was still contracted to the Giants. That was the only question. And we asked Peter Blucher. He assured us that, you know, it was a decision he'd taken independently. So it was more just a question. I mean, when you're potentially about to sell your house, you don't really allow someone to come in and renovate the kitchen. So we just really asked the question, you know, how did the surgery come about? And, you know, we got the answer in the end. But all's well that ends well. I think it's a good trade for both clubs.
Hey, Dave, there's been a lot of whining and whinging about all the draft picks that GWS have been given. What they tended to forget is you've got a young kid on your list by the name of Zach Williams, a boy from Narandra, who was actually rookied by you guys, had a pretty tough upbringing, an Indigenous boy, and doing tremendously well on this list. And we all look at these number one picks, but you've been smart enough to go and grab kids like this from Narandra, which is exactly what everyone's whinging about, but no one else picked him up.
I think you're right, Wayne. I think he's a great story for the game, Zach Williams. And, you know, even Jack Steele, who today played in the NEAFL, he ended up coming through the academy, which he got passed over completely 1 year by every club. And so he was listed as a top age player. So he'd been looked at before. Adam Kennedy's a player that, you know, a lot of clubs passed over. Rory Lobb, you know, went through three drafts, was drafted at age 21. So, yeah, I think it's a good point you make. Williams is a great story for the AFL in New South Wales.
That's one side of the recruiting strategy, Dave. But what was the focus to go and get experienced players for other clubs? Because today you've got seven, Mumford, Shaw, Ward, Johnson, Palmer, Scully, Patful. You've recruited players that are playing consistently good football. And as BT said before, these players have wrapped themselves around a lot of exciting young talent.
Yeah, I think Wayne, the thinking was that both the new clubs were designed to try to build through the draft, and then when you get the players at that age, we really needed to get some senior maturity in and around them. And I think what's happened is we've been able to get not just mature players, but very, very elite competitive players. As you say, Shaw's probably in All-Australian form again, we think. Mumford's been fantastic. Johnson's played a great role for the year. Patfield's two-time best and fairest winner of Brisbane. Obviously, Griffin's captain to club. So, you know, for our young players, they're not just looking at mature players. They're looking at leaders and competitors, and, you know, it's made a huge difference.
Academies, Dave, with so much talk about it, I'm not sure how much people actually understand the full extent of it, including myself. But in simplistic terms, what does it all mean? I mean, what does it mean to you when you hear people in Melbourne, clubs in Melbourne, saying, oh, these should be abolished, it's an advantage for you guys? From my reckoning, you guys don't get any father and son picks yet as a result of your, you know, embryonic stages in building the club. Put it in simple terms for us. What does it all mean?
Yeah, we haven't got any father sons coming through that we know of yet, but we'd love some if we could. They're about 18 years away, maybe a bit closer. But look, in simple terms, I mean, 54% of Australia is in Queensland, New South Wales. It's providing 10% of AFL lists. It's not a number that's good enough. And the academies are playing a role in hopefully a step change in those numbers. And then we're doing it in a way just like father-son, where you've got to list them at fair value. They're subject to bidding. So, you know, even this week, Jacob Hopper gets talked about like he's some sort of free hit. He went pick seven. We had to acquire enough points to match whatever bid came in, and he went pick seven. So, you know, he's a highly talented player, but he did go at pick seven. The fair value's there to protect the interests of equalisation, but...
So no matter how many kids you've got in these academies, you can only ever pick a couple anyway, can't you?
Yeah, that's right. And I think, you know, the beauty of it is that as we start to hum along, and hopefully the Swans as well, academy players get spilt around the competition. There's some players in our academy at Port Adelaide now, but, you know, I know you and I were talking this morning. I get frustrated just from even a Swans point of view that Isaac Heaney should be one of the great stories of the game. You know, we should be celebrating the fact that a kid can come through with the background he's got and start to put the AFL on the map from where he's from. And I know Jay's from Geelong. I likened it to Jimmy Bartel signing with Melbourne Storm. That's what it would be like. I mean, he's creating a fan base. You know, Hopper and these other guys out of the Riverina are hopefully continuing to stimulate the game down there. And we list them all at fair value. We're playing a side today with three father and son picks who are all listed at fair value. I'm not standing here saying let's wind back the father-son.
And they're all guns.
Yeah.
But, Dave, what about, to flip it and play devil's advocate, you're stockpiling weapons. You've had all these picks. You've got them all sitting there. So when it comes to getting points and having the ability to get points to then get hold of your academy kids, you're better placed than most.
Well, I think we get dealt a set of rules that were approved by all the clubs and the AFL Commission. And then Gubby and Silvani and now Craig Cameron and others just go to work and work out how do we build as best we can. I mean, we're going to apologise for trying to do the best we can out of the draft every year.
So it's as simple as everybody, the rules are there. They can't get you on the previous picks. They're going, well, hang on, we'll target the academies now because it's stating and starting to look like, and again, I stress, look like, because you've done nothing yet, done nothing at all in terms of being able to recapture this dream that everybody's talking about flag after flag after flag.
Well, you go the other way, I reckon. What is it gained by stripping back the academies? If we didn't invest $800,000 a year, which we do, and the Swans invest about $1.2 million into our academies, then no one else is going to be investing it in New South Wales talent. So we could pull that back and then just go back to drafting Victorian kids again.
Hey, Dave, it's a competitive marketplace and sometimes you lock horns with your crosstown rivals, but has Sydney played a role in helping you as a club begin to start to make traction with regards to the competitive landscape? And have you learnt things from what Sydney have done in 30 years of history that have benefited the club?
Yeah, definitely. I think, look, we've got a lot of admiration for the Swans. I think, you know, they've been the sole flag bearer up here for a long time, and it's probably the most competitive sporting market in the world. It's an incredible market, and you know it back to front. I think, you know, they're a very, very professional club, obviously, and I think they've earned the respect of not just AFL fans up here, but the NRL, ARU, others. I mean, Swans is a very, very big club in Sydney. We've got to carve out our own space in Western Sydney. There's 2 million people here, and, you know, we really do rely on the Swans to help us build the sort of rivalry. In 3 or 4 weeks' time, we're hoping that game's a sellout here. And if we can start selling games out, you'd love to think that the derby between the Giants and Swans is as big a game every year as State of Origin is in this city.
Dave, when you head back down to Lawn for your Christmas holidays and sit up there at the pub with Mickey Turner and BT, Ryan, and he sort of takes his shirt off in the sun, you know, how does the great man sort of operate in, you know, that sort of Lawn pub environment? Does he really dominate as much as we think he does?
Yeah, he does, and I think the weather up here is so good today. He had the shirt off today as I was touring him around our facility, but look, he's a big, you know as well as I do, that there's a lot of business in the AFL industry that gets done in Lawn, and if you're not there... if you're not there, then you know you've a chance to miss out. So I mean, I treat it as a business trip, not a holiday.
Mickey Turner from the Geelong Falcons has provided more players to Dave Matthews than any other single person in the history of the game. Dave, is that right?
It's true. I get about 4 text messages every time. I know how many possessions Devin Smith gets because I get that number of text messages every game.
Insider trading, isn't it?
Yeah. Appreciate your time, Dave. Thanks for joining us. It's time now for...
This is Wayne Carey's Duck Shoot.
What cough syrup? Wow. What cough syrup are you on, soft boy?
What cough syrup? I tell you what, I've got more... I'm taking all sorts of vitamins, mainly BT, just vitamin C, all of that, cranberry tablets, vitamin C tablets, everything, and the numbing of the throat gargle.
Farm update?
Farm update, haven't been up there, Swatter.
I think it's on the market again, bro.
Like he's dropped off.
I want to improve this segment, if I was you, boys.
Doug, who was the best flag flyer at North Melbourne in your time?
Flag flyer?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, we were talking about it earlier.
Yeah. No, Swatter would fly the flag.
Someone
for
in
you.
Front of me, comfortably, Doug.
Swatter would fly the flag. Who?
Kicked 7 goals in his last game.
Scholey.
Yep.
Yeah, no, surely...
He's in there.
Yeah. No, you know what? That's part of a good team.
Okay, who wasn't a very good flag flyer? Yeah. Who ran?
Oh, there are a few. A bloke
don't say Fruity.
No, I'll quickly run these numbers at you. He kicked 7, 10 and 7 in his first 3 games.
Horse.
No. Mm.
Surely.
Hey, McAdam.
Yeah,
exactly.
Hey, Duck, have you ever stuck your head out of a BMW with no shirt on and posted it on Twitter, Richard Champion style?
That is what? One of the all-time great. What? Have you seen this, BT?
What? No. Triple M Twitter, get onto it right now. It what? Should be up there. Richard Champion, tell him, Duck.
Yeah, Spud Frawley gave him just about every barrel yesterday. That machine gun at the start of the Duck Shoot, that's exactly what Spud gave Richard Champion. Standing out the top of a... Mercedes-Benz Berwick car, which, by the way, if you need a car, get down to Mercedes-Benz Berwick.
Not quite.
He standing out the top of a car, BT, with his shirt off, right?
Sunroof.
Out the sunroof. Yep. And the caption was, oh, beautiful day up here. And, you know, I might go for a drive, you know, Queensland, beautiful weather, with his shirt off. It was a dead set tosser's effort.
Yeah. Duck, you would have been zoned to the GWS under these academy rules. How would you have swallowed that?
I only got approached by one team, BT. I think as a kid, if you get, you're just happy to get to a club. You see so many kids that are disappointed that don't get drafted at the end of each draft. And so just to get to a club, I think you'd be over the moon. Mm.
You think Collingwood can make the top 4, Duck, after what you saw yesterday?
No.
How come?
Because they can't.
They're still not good enough.
What about Richmond?
No.
No?
Neither can make the top 4, BT.
Can the Kangaroos, Duck, win the flag?
Yes, Swatter, they can. If you make the top 8, you can win the flag. So,
all right.
They can.
Do you think Ross Lyon gives a stuff about winning any games for the rest of the year?
I would say he doesn't, Jay-Z. I don't think he really cares
your comments recently to Ross Lyon. Tell me something.
Did you?
I don't.
What did he say?
No, he didn't say much. this is where we tell you something you don't already know. What do you got for us, gents?
Swatter.
You were complaining about the stand at Mandurah, were you not?
Hayden Ballantyne wing. Yep.
His grandmother won Tats Lotto.
That's right.
And gave little Hayden $1 million buckaroonies, and I think that's how the stand got erected.
You're not going to go with that, are you?
No, I'm not. I just wanted to re-back over that and just make sure I cleared that up.
So where's your tell me something I don't know?
That's it.
Oh, mate, Christ, everyone knows that. Yes. Hey, by the way, I reckon you can... Look, Ead... We were talking about Gold Coast earlier, right?
Yeah.
Now, I reckon Ead, Scott, Clayton and Ashcroft This is just what I'm hearing. Have presented a 3-year rebuild plan to the board on Friday, just gone.
Really?
Are you just hearing it? Sounds like you're reading it.
What a thought. You want to make sure that can go to air.
New build.
So the coach
tell me something we should know.
Okay, fact.
Right.
They have presented.
He's made that decision. Bugger it. I'm going.
Yeah, right.
Don't walk all over a good story, boys. Ede, Scott, Clayton, and Ashcroft have presented. This is my information. The 3-year rebuild plan to the board on Friday just gone. And I gather the board have swallowed it, given the publicity through Jay-Z's article, etc., need to throw McKenna a little bit under the bus to justify their new plan. Mm-hmm. It's also pointed out that the injury toll under McKenna's reign, he had plenty of injuries as well, didn't he?
Yes, that is
a fact. Yeah. And it is interesting that players leaving under Bluey wasn't a factor.
No.
Why is it now a factor?
Good point. Nice.
That's interesting news if that club has it's gone to the board just last week, Brian. That's a little nugget.
I come with
news flat for a couple of weeks now.
News breaking. What do you got for us, Jay-Z?
Lewis Taylor, out of contract up there at the Brisbane Lions, is very much on Essendon's radar. So the Lions are trying to sign up all their gun youngsters at the moment. We know oodles of them have left in recent years. They're trying to sign up Lewis Taylor, can't. And the Bombers are circling the rising star winner.
Dale, Lewis, what have you got for us?
New to the segment, apologies up front to SWAT. Did you know SWAT used to wear Uncle John's leather pants out when we went out in Sydney?
What you do up there?
Oh, boy. Duck, what do you got?
Well, there's a very, very high-profile, good-looking rooster that this afternoon, he's 6'4". He's going to go to the Botanical Gardens.
Have
a picnic with his girls this afternoon and just enjoy a lovely little picnic at the Botanical Gardens. That's something you didn't know until right now, BT.
Oh, well, we might have to rest this segment.
Catch you later, like an alligator.
Duck the family man.
Hooroo. Shut up! The foot is on Triple M! Triple M rocks football.